Welcome to PIM Matters. I'm your host, Jeff Lynn. Thanks for tuning in. On the show, we talk about the ever-changing landscape of healthcare payments and the impacts to healthcare payers, providers, and consumers. You can follow the conversation on Twitter at hashtag Payment Matters and follow me at Jeff B. Lynn. This is part two of our series on the role of government in healthcare, including recent regulatory shifts in response to the COVID-19 pandemic. I'd welcome back my guest, Stanley Nakamson, principal of Nakamson Advisors, a health IT consulting firm dedicated to finding innovative uses for health information technology and encouraging its adoption. In part one of this series, Stanley and I were discussing the power of bringing patient health data together with technology and how that can lead to better health outcomes. This takes us into part two of the series, where we start off talking about the new interoperability rules and how consumers stand to benefit.
You know, as I look at my Apple Watch on my wrist here and you're telling stories here, that would be an amazing experience where there's literally a digital called care keeper that's making sure you're healthy. I think part of this is, I think you call it like personal health, which is the consumers owning their digital health.
Yes.
You know, I did read somewhere recently that there are some new rules, right, tied to interoperability from a consumer's owning their digital health records. How much do you know about that, and where do you see that helping consumers in the end run?
Following the interoperability regulations, I think the key for consumers is that providers, hospitals, and doctor's offices have to have the right interfaces, these APIs or application program interfaces, to allow apps either on your phone or on your tablet or computer to access your healthcare and download it. Now, again, just getting your information is nice. It's nice to see, but understanding it and acting on it, I think, is a key role for some of these new apps, interpreting it and giving you signals like we just talked about. You know, simply sending me information that my blood pressure is 240 over 180. It's nice to know, but is that good, bad, indifferent? Is that higher than it used to be, lower than it used to be? I need some interpretation of that and ways to use that data. I also need, from a consumer perspective, my feelings, you also need to do as little work as possible in getting that information. For years, we've tried to encourage people to set up their own personal health records, and there have been a number of systems that have put it together. Kaiser's had one, some other health plans, and some, you know, and Google and Microsoft also got into it. But it was too much work for someone to put together all of the information and input it and put it in the right place and give people sharing rights. And also there was little to no interpretation. So again, the usability, the ease of use, and the usefulness of the information, I think, are going to be keys in moving that forward. Data is nice, but doing something with data is the more important effort.
Right. There's so much data about your health, right? And you have to like dig through what's going to be important here. In prior guests, they've always talked about this, which is you go to these large conferences, there's probably 10,000 apps in those conferences.
Yes.
Maybe I'm being exaggerating, but there's a lot of apps out there. And the key question is like, how do you get mass adoption of a technology or something that's really going to drive change, and primarily consumer change? You know, there's all these consumers in the U.S. And do you think that vision that you laid out in terms of what healthcare, or that I call that the carekeeper digital experience, do you think the government's going to be involved in that scenario where they're requiring or mandating that digital health record, you know, every consumer has one? Is there a role for the government to do that?
Well, I think there is a role, but the government has to be very careful. There's been a lot of pushback from the privacy side on government mandates for, you know, large healthcare databases or complete healthcare data on individuals. They're really worried about the government mandating that and where that information is going to go and who's going to use it. I think there is a role for the government in a couple of ways, in helping to set standards and perhaps in doing some sort of a certification effort, much as they've done on electronic health records, getting some sort of accreditation that your mobile app or your computer program does what it says it's doing or meets a certain set of criteria. That is a very good role for the government or some sort of accrediting organization. It's going to take, even with those standards, it is going to take some companies getting together and you know, agreeing to use the standard like companies did when they agreed to use a VHS over beta and things like that in moving the consumer products forward. We've had examples of companies coming up with ideas and getting the consumers to use them, you know, without government intervention. I mean, the whole idea of mobile phones, for example, or using tablets. And you always look at a company like FedEx that somehow managed to convince people that they absolutely positively had to get something there overnight, and were able to turn that into a whole industry. I mean, before FedEx, there really was nothing that did that, and somehow they've managed, and there are a number of competitors that do the same thing now. It's going to be a combination of some government urging and eliminating some of the privacy concerns, as well as companies moving forward and agreeing to coalesce around a standard to move this forward. And then we have to be concerned about the cost. Who's going to pay for that? Doctors, hospitals now have to set up these processes to make data available. Great. Who's going to pay for the apps to get that data? Is that something that's going to be free? Is that something that the consumer is going to have to pay for? And if they're going to have to pay for it, are they going to be willing to pay for it? And how much? And then we get into some of the equity issues, like for populations that are economically disadvantaged, what happens to them? It's nice that people that have enough money can have these nice fancy apps, but what about the large percent of the population that can't really afford it on a monthly basis, and perhaps they're the folks that need it the most?
Yeah,
there's a lot of policy questions and technology questions involved in this.
Yeah, it's not a simple response because there's so much complexity. You know, it's funny, like as you're talking, I recall, you know, 10, 15 years ago where I would have to go buy an email account, right, in order for me to go get email. And now you get email for free across the board. You can go sign up on multiple sites for that.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and clearly they're monetizing that in different ways across the board. The question here for you is that, like, where do you see these large, clearly some large tech companies that are out there, and they're very consumer centric. What do you think is their role in healthcare? And this is just more conjecture here. But what's the role of big tech in healthcare, based on your experience, or do you need someone that has deep expertise in healthcare with technology to be focused on this?
Yeah, I would move towards the latter side. It's a different kind of market. My experience in the healthcare industry is that, I mean, there's a lot of specialized knowledge, and there's a lot of resistance to change. One of the things that I found as a consultant is that people that had what I would consider very good ideas, things that could be implemented by a health plan or provider and actually make money, it was extremely difficult to get anyone to be the beta tester or the first user of that technology. It always had to be proven technology. What you had to say was, well, you know, we've got health plans 1, 2, and 3 are already using it, so don't you want to use it? If you're working with 3 people that have already used it, you're in good shape. If you're working with someone who does not have any customers yet, that was always difficult. So the first hurdle will be in getting somebody, the first few folks, to accept it. That's one thing, and that will come from, it has to come from people that know a lot about healthcare. It's not going to come from, you know, Microsoft selling a new software package. I don't believe to just use one example of a tech company. That's just not going to happen. If Microsoft works with some of the big health plans and or other health technology companies and say, okay, let's see how we can put our expertise together to come up with a solution, I think that will be a lot more effective than just individual companies. That's one thing. And the decision as to, you know, how can it be monetized is going to be critical. You know, who's going to make the money from it? Who's going to pay for it? How are the costs spread out? All of those issues. We do have some very altruistic companies in this country. There's no question about it. Whether you call some of these projects loss leaders or contributions to the community, they're certainly out there. But as far as something that's very widespread, we're going to have to figure out the commercial case for it. And that was some of the early resistance, even to the HIPAA standards, that people said, all right, we know we have this, but show me the cost benefit. And almost every change, a lot of the industry pushes back and says, show me the cost benefit of this, and then maybe I'll consider it. Yes, it's a good idea. Everybody agrees that interoperability is a good idea, for example. But what's the cost and benefit of it? You know, is there a revenue opportunity? Is there a savings opportunity? You've got to show that before you see widespread adoption.
If you're just tuning in, you're listening to Payment Matters. I'm joined by Stanley Nachimson, and we're discussing the role of government in healthcare.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense here. And you know, as I look at this and kind of listen to you speak here, you know, there's other roles out there, right? And I think one of them is like, yeah, it makes sense to be interoperable. The other thing that you're hearing also is offering price transparency in many aspects here. The surprise billing that occurs is, you know, people aren't happy about that. And, you know, there's an upcoming role we know that's coming in 2021 tied to that. Maybe for our listeners who may not be aware of it, maybe just kind of your take and maybe your description of kind of what those roles are.
Sure. And this goes to the more of the patient-centered view of healthcare, and the fact that more patients are taking charge of not only their medical care, but of paying for their medical care. Most times, at least in the past, when you've had gone to the hospital for even a planned operation, not exactly sure how much it's going to cost. And you didn't necessarily shop around from hospital A to hospital B to hospital C based on cost. Either your doctor was associated with a hospital, or your friend just had surgery at a hospital and likes it, or the hospital is very close to where you live. And that's how you make your choice. The government, in response to some pressures to help keep down costs, has now mandated that hospitals make their prices for a set of services available to the public. Not only their sort of standard list price, but the price that they've negotiated with every health plan with which they do business, and the price that they will give to a customer that is not covered by a health plan or wishes to pay cash. So you'll actually have the opportunity to go ahead and say, oh, it'll be cheaper. My doctor's associated with any of these hospitals. They're all within a reasonable distance. And gee, it'll be cheaper for me to go to this hospital. So maybe I'll decide to have my surgery in hospital A rather than hospital B or C. There's some thought that this will help consumers make better choices. Again, this is where we see some of the, I'll call it interoperability or the availability of data. and the opportunity for apps coming in. It's not just that the data is out there, but how is it made available? How does a consumer use those pieces of information to decide? Do I have to call every hospital and find out what it costs? Is there something on a website for each hospital? Is there a state website, or can I go to a vendor website, or is there an app that I can, you know, download? Do a hospital charge app, for example, where I plug in the operation that I'm going to have and who my health plan is, and then get a list of hospitals and their charges. I think that's technologically possible. It's a question of standardization, usability, and cost, again, on the technology side. Can I do it? How can I do it? How much will it cost? And how easy it is it for me to do?
Yeah, there's a, you know, the question here is, I think you hit upon it, usability is one of the key factors here, because there's a, if you mandate it or if you build it, will they come? It's sort of the Field of Dreams motto.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
And because clearly you have a mandate, but it could be really difficult to use. And, you know, thereby you may have minimal adoption of that. Where is there, what are the thoughts here on, are there any mandates tied to adoption metrics or usability or usage with these upcoming roles tied to transparency?
There are mandates that, you know, hospitals have to make this information available, and they have to provide ways to for individuals and the public and others and other companies to get a hold of this information. That's one item, but there's no requirement for people to use it. It's almost the analog to the interoperability for consumers. Providers have to make the data available, but there's no requirement that an individual has to use it. So this really goes back to the, you know, if it's easy to use, if it's worthwhile to use, people will start using it. But if it's tough to use the app, they're not going to use it. I don't see a government mandate on, you know, the other side for patients to have to use that data. I think it'd be very difficult to monitor, and you'd get a lot of resistance from an individual standpoint, for the government to tell you that you have to use this app before you can get your operation. I can see them making it available, but I can't see them mandating that. So the government will make the opportunity available, but they won't mandate usage from the user perspective.
Got it. So, you know, getting near the end here, I'd love to kind of get, you know, you've clearly been in healthcare on both sides of healthcare, on the government side and also working with a lot of the healthcare IT companies that are out there.
Yeah, some people would say I've been there too long, but that's okay.
But you'd love to see your like, what's your vision? If in 10 years or 15 years, what would you like to see in healthcare? If you had an antidote for things that ail healthcare, what would that be? And what would you like to see in 10 to 15 years to really drive the country forward from a healthcare perspective?
Well, I am a big believer in information and using information and analyzing information. And there's sort of two themes that are going on these days. One is your population health, gathering enough information together so that you know how good a treatment is based on a population, or information that you can compare different treatments. For instance, you know, back surgery was used quite often for people that had back problems, and they finally did gather enough information to show that there's no advantage to back surgery versus physical therapy and perhaps some pain relieving medication. I'd love to see information like that be made more and more available for an individual to look at. So first of all, getting the population data together, big database somehow of treatments and results, things like that, on a population basis. And then from a personal perspective, allowing somehow your individual data, even your genetic data, your health history, to bounce against that and see what the right treatment for you would be, or what would happen to you if you did certain treatments. That's where I sort of see things going a little bit in going in the future. That would be ideal. From a personal standpoint, medically, they need to figure out a way to get rid of needles. I hate needles. I hate getting shots. I hate getting IVs. There's got to be a better way of infusing people or getting blood out of people. But that's just my own personal foible. But certainly the information, the idea of information, we've seen how that has changed the airline industry, the car buying industry, several other industries, the ability to use your own preferences and look at overall industry or overall population statistics to find the right combination for you. You know, what's the right car for you based on your personal preferences and what the industry statistics are? What's the right car for you? You can go to a couple of websites and find that out. It would be wonderful to be able to do that through an app or on the computer through a website and find out if you should be getting one surgery or another, or do you need to call the doctor, or is this something that's pretty minor and will just pass?
Those are great visions here, Stanley, and thanks for sharing them with me and our listeners today. So for all you, those are the payment matters we're tackling today. Thank you to my guests, Stanley Nickamson, for joining me today. Stanley, where can our listeners learn more about you if they want to connect with you?
Oh, well, my LinkedIn page is certainly available. You can look me up at Stanley Nickamson or Nickamson Advisors. That's probably the best way to see what I've been thinking about and talking about.
That's great. And we can all tell you're definitely a wealth of knowledge. And thank you for joining me today. And thank you.
My pleasure.
Yeah.
And those are the payment matters we're tackling today. Thanks for listening in. Remember that you can listen in to this episode weekdays at 4:30 a.m., 12:30 p.m., and 8:30 p.m. Eastern. If you have a comment about this episode or show, follow hashtag Payment Matters or connect with me on Twitter at Jeff B. Lynn. You can learn more about my show at healthcarenowradio.com or at instamed.com. Until next time, I'm Jeff Lynn.